bless your heart. My thoughts and prayers are with you. Have faith. All statements that are usually intended to provide hope are so often used as a hollow means to dismiss someone who's found themselves in a less than ideal position. Has faith become obsolete? Or is it something much more than a false sense of hope conjured by an insincere statement of concern? In this episode, I tell the story of how what seemed to be a hopeless joint custody battle taught me the concept of faith is so much more than something to be used as a way to pacify worry and fear. Welcome to Forbidden Fruit Podcast, where each episode will awaken you to the knowledge of a better you through insightful discussions and shared experiences that instantaneously changed our lives. Don't forget to follow or subscribe, leave a review, as well as turn on your notifications so you'll know when a new episode is available. Be sure to listen to the end so you don't miss my bite of the apple moment when I realize why there's no reason for me to be worried or concerned. The idea or the concept of faith, to me, in my personal opinion, sounds to be more cliche than an actual ideology. It's almost like if someone tells you to have faith, it would be more genuine to say, well, you're screwed. Because at that point, when you're talking about having faith in something or having faith for a certain reason or purpose, it's as though all hope has been lost. And so for me, that's how it was for the longest prior to the events of the story that I'm going to tell you. And so kind of to elaborate a little bit more on that, on the concept of faith being cliche, it's almost kind of like Christianity being more pop culture than it is a religious ideology that people live their lives based on. You know what I mean? It's just like, this is what we do. This is not something that I study or really understand. It's just what I do. So it's very, almost, for me, in my opinion, it's very hollow when someone, specifically in America, because the dominant religion ideology is Christianity. And it's not like, you know, you practice this in a country where it's not popular, or a place where it's not popular. So when you do it here, it almost, for me, doesn't really mean anything. So just like faith, when someone typically would say, well, you know, have faith, well, you're just pretty much saying, yo, you're screwed. It's no different than someone sneezing and someone says, well, bless you. You're not really blessing them. You're not really thinking, oh, wow, you know, I hope you're blessed because of the sneeze that you just had. Or if someone, you know, passes away, my thoughts and prayers are with you. You're really not praying for that person most of the time. And you probably don't think about it after the fact because, you know, you have your own life and things to deal with. So for me, the idea of faith wasn't something that I could rely on. Because for me, my understanding of faith now is I can relax and I can be calm in situations that seem dire because I believe or I have faith that I believe that things are going to work out without actually seeing them work out or actually understanding the means or the plan or the sequence of events that's going to cause this unfortunate situation to work out. And so to go into the story, and I want you to bear with me because it's going to be like a little bit of a winding road to actually get to the point, because I believe that faith is like a relationship. It's like trusting. It's really like, in my personal opinion, trusting in God. And I did get really hyper religious with you, but I just believe that my concept of faith is God showing me over the course of time or a series of events that regardless of what happens, whether regardless of the situation I find myself in, it's going to work out somehow. It might not be the way that I want it to work out or the way I envision it working out, but at some point it's going to be okay. And that's just my understanding of it. So I don't necessarily have to walk around and say, I need to have faith. It's just what it is. It's like me being calm in these situations is, I don't think about it. It's no different than me having to think about, can I sit in this chair without it breaking? you know what I mean? Is can I drive in my car without it breaking down? It's not something that I think about. It's like breathing. So to get to the story, it really started when I came back from a deployment. So if you didn't know, I'm in the Air Force, and I came back from this deployment, and I had this grand plan. I was going to get out of the military. I was going to finish school. Then I was going to do my best to get a job overseas so I could have an opportunity to see the world, because I just enjoyed the idea of, you know, seeing other countries and, you know, interacting with other people of different cultures and things like that. Because when I was deployed, I think that was the biggest thing that stood out to me. It's just people are people in general, regardless of where they are. Oh, how they grew up or what they was taught or what their faith or whatever. It's just, you know, people are people. So it just kind of opened up my mind to the possibilities of connecting with more people. And so I come back, and then I ended up, you know, meeting my son's mother. And, you know, one thing led to another. Come to find out, I'm going to be a father. So that plan completely is done for now. And so in my mind, it's like, I'm a bit devastated from the idea of, you know, my plan is falling apart. But at the same time, you know, like, I am looking forward to the idea of being a father. So if you know me, or if you knew me prior to being a father, this was forced vulnerability for me. I was the person that was like, you know what, I don't want to be emotionally attached to anybody or anything. And the only thing that was acceptable to me to be attached to emotionally would be your child. And so going from that, from being, you know, like this non-vulnerable person to now becoming a father, it was a bit of a forced vulnerability situation. However, the situation that I was in was less than ideal. The relationship was toxic. And so as soon as I found out I was going to be a father, that was leveraged against me to manipulate my behavior, to manipulate me. So the one time I become vulnerable, the day that the Grinch grew a heart, that thing that forced me to grow a heart was being used to manipulate me, to be honest. And so now I am in Fort Collins, Colorado, from Little Rock, Arkansas. So I have no family here whatsoever. And I mean, in Arkansas, it's like 1,400 miles away from where I am. So I have no family to kind of help me through this emotionally. And so I did what I could. So the first thing was, all right, you need to get an attorney, you need to get a lawyer. And so what I did was I would just get on the phone. So I got on the phone and I would call, I think I probably may have called easily 10, 15 attorneys, just trying to say, hey, you know what, this is the situation. You know, I'm going to be a father soon. She's saying, my son's mother is saying that I'm not going to be allowed to be around, you know, only, you know, one or two supervised visits a week, you know, one overnight, you know, a month or whatever it was. And so every attorney up until that point would say, yo, it's not, you're the father. That case is too hard. It's not worth my time, even if you paid me. So at this point, I went from having a plan. I'm going to go overseas, graduate, get my degree, go overseas. That's done for. Now I'm about to be a father. I'm excited about that. But now that's being leveraged against me. And now I'm also losing hope for the idea of I can have like actually raise my son. Because probably my biggest fear is honestly being like my father, like being a bad father. And so now I'm facing that. Like, look, I mean, you're going to end up being like your pops. Like one, you know, seeing him, you know, 4 days a month. You know what I mean? Like, cause when I was younger, I went to my dad's house like maybe every other weekend. So in my mind, like, you're not a parent. Because if I had a dog, let's just say if I had a dog and I only fed him, you know, 4 days a month, like I go to jail when that dog died. If I had a plant that only watered 4 days a month, like it's going to die. So to say you're a father and you only see your child, you know, every other weekend, 4 days a month, or maybe six, depending on how the weekends fall, like you're not really raising anybody. Who are you raising 4 days or 6 days out of 30 or 31 or 28, depending on the month. You're not a father. You're not a parent. You're not influencing your child at all, or the upbringing, or the you know, psychological, emotional makeup of your child. It's just not possible. And so that's where I was. And it got so bad to where I lost all hope. I remember one night I had a breakdown. It just kind of all piled up on me to where, one, I was financially, I was okay. Like I was responsible, but I live in Fort Collins, Colorado. It was expensive. So I worked at Wells Fargo. And I think I made like $40,000 a year. So I'm making about $1,200 every other week, which is pretty, it's decent. But I mean, the cost of living in Fort Collins, you're not going to get an apartment for less, a one bed, one bath apartment for less than $1,000. And so for me, after I paid all of my bills and I had no debt, I was absolutely debt free. I wasn't kicking it. I wasn't partying. I wasn't doing anything. Like me having a good time was going to a movie, like maybe once or twice a month. So after all my bills were paid, I think I had like $400 a month, $400 left. And that's before I ate food. And so that, on top of, one, not being able to find an attorney to take my case because I am the father, I'm the male in this situation. And then two, even if I could find an attorney, like how am I going to afford a $2,000 retainer or $3,000 retainer? Because when it was all said and done, I think I probably paid 20 grand. So this is the situation at hand. And so it just came to a head one night. It was just too much. Emotionally, it was just too much. I just was crying hysterically. I remember vividly, I called, I think I talked to my mom or my stepmom, I'm not sure. Just hysterical. And I think that night I just played No Weapons Formed Against Me Shall Prosper on repeat. And I just went to sleep to that. And I woke up the next day, and it was just the oddest thing. I was just so calm. It was like I was in a different situation, although the situation hasn't changed. I was just at peace for some reason. And I guess the scriptures talk about, God can give you a peace that transcends understanding. And to me, that's how I made sense of it, because there was no reason for me to be calm. The situation was the same. And so this is kind of like the first glimpse or the first taste of like building faith, because again, like it was no reason for me to be calm. I didn't see anything at that point, or any outcome, or conceived any outcome at that point that should give me any hope or reason to feel like this is going to work out somehow. And so I eventually started, when I started working at Wells Fargo, I met this guy, ironically named Nick, and he was going through a similar situation. And he told me about this attorney that helped his wife at the time. And he was like, man, he's a good guy. You should talk to him. Like, that's fine. I'm like, all right, cool. Because at this point, I'll talk to anybody. Because I eventually found an attorney. It was a lady. I forgot what her name was. And she was, you could tell, like, she didn't really care about the case. Maybe she was a new attorney, a new lawyer, and she just needed a case. She just needed some, a means of making money. And so she took my case and she didn't really seem interested in it. And so ironically enough, so when the day my son was born, I went to my attorney and I said, I went to her and I was like, hey, my son was born. I'm just letting you know what's going on. She won't let him have my last name in any way. She's pretty much still leveraging him. I'm just letting you know what's going on, because I feel like in order for me to be a part of my son's life, like it's going to take litigation. And she pretty much told me to calm down. She just had a baby. And I'm like, okay. And that, in my mind, was kind of like, all right, the extra stamp. Well, any form of hope that I had for me being able to find an attorney was from that, at that point, was snatched. Because it's like, all right, the attorney that I did find that charged me $60 to sit down with her for an hour just to tell her what my case was, then turned around and took my case and then pretty much told me, like, calm down after my son was born. Like, this is the reason why I'm here. And so, ironically enough, I ran into the guy. I worked with a guy named Nick at Wells Fargo, and he told me about this lawyer that his wife used and helped her out. And he said, he's a good guy. You should go talk to him. So I'm like, okay. So I go down there and I talk to my attorney. So let me describe. I'm not gonna say his name, but let me describe my attorney. If I had to describe him, imagine a white Morgan Freeman. So imagine if you could like take Matlock and Morgan Freeman and put them in the same body. I mean, like the voice tone, like this guy could do voice work. I mean, he's just so calm. Like he had been practicing for 40 years. It's just like he knew what he was doing. And so I'm sitting here talking to him, just, you know, void of all hope, no faith whatsoever. And so we kind of connected on the fact that his father was in the Air Force. And so I think we had maybe talked for like an hour. I mean, you know, for 10, 20 minutes just before we even got to the actual case, just connected on the fact that, you know, I was military. He grew up military. And so that was like the first moment of like a genuine, this may be okay. And so I had to go away for training in the military. So that means for a certain window of time, I was full-time military, which allowed me, because I made significantly more money active duty military than I would ever at Wells Fargo. So me being gone those, you know, 3 or 4 months at that time allowed me to afford a retainer. Because a retainer out the gate is like $3,500. They won't even deal with you unless you have $3,500 off the rip. And so, again, like another step of like, yo, like this is becoming okay. This is glimpses or signs of this thing that was at one point hopeless is starting to make a turn, a very swift turn that I did not foresee on my own, under my own ability. And so we laid out a plan. So pretty much the plan was, my son was born September 23rd. And for whatever reason, when my son was born, I got the call, said, hey, you know what, so-and-so's finna go into labor, you know, come to the hospital. So I came there. And during the entire pregnancy, like we didn't interact at all. Like we weren't on any talking terms or whatsoever. So them calling me to the hospital was probably our first interaction in several months. And so it got to the point where no one asked me to leave, you know, after he was born. And the baby was in the room with us. And so I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna say anything. I'm not gonna mess this up. And so I just stayed. And, you know, one day turned to two turned to three turned to four. And ultimately, when we were able to take the baby home, take my son home, I pretty much stayed on the floor in her room, like laying right next to my son's crib. And whenever, you know, he would get up and cry or whatever, like I would get up and feed him, change diapers or whatever, and the whole nine. And so that led, you know, no one asked me to leave. And so it got to the point where I went from sleeping on the floor to sleeping in the bed. And so I'm like, okay, I might have to just take this L and just, you know, she's leveraging what she wants is me at all costs. And so in my mind, it's all right, let me fulfill that fantasy until I can get to the point where I can save enough money to pay for an attorney, you know, to include that window of time when I had to go away for military training, but I could make that money. And also, a lot of the situation was, well, if the baby's a certain age, like, you know, 1 year, a year old or less, then it's pretty much a no-go. You have absolutely no chance of any like real time with your child. And so I'm like, all right, I'm getting all the time in the world with my son. Let me just, you know, keep my mouth shut, you know, bite my tongue, hold my nose until, because by the time I went to military training, my son would have been 8 months, which means by the time I got back and got to, you know, and went to court for this whole thing, I would have, he'd be one, and that would give me a best chance. So I'm literally, for about, I would say about 8 months, I'm laying in a bed with a woman that literally leveraged the only thing that I ever cared about against me. And so also another thing that I didn't mention before is like, so when I found my attorney, we went to court. So when I get back from military training, I'm like, hey, you know what? I got a lawyer. We're going to court. Like, I'm going to be a part of my son's life regardless. So, you know, I had to tell you, party's over. And so we get to court. I'm still at Wells. So I'm back at Wells Fargo. The military money that I got is cut off. It's done. And so we get to court. And so, again, remember, I'm after I pay all my bills, I'm making about $400. I got $400 a month before I've eaten food. And so we get to court, and when you start that whole process of custody, you're pretty much putting yourself on child support. And so the judge only gave me no overnights. It was like I get to see him 2 hours on a Wednesday evening, and that was about it. And so how they calculate child support is based on how much both parties make, and based on overnights. Well, I was getting no overnights whatsoever, and so that somehow came up to me paying $880 a month in child support. Now remember, that's about $480 over what I have left before I've even eaten food. So now I went from, you know, having a plan to go overseas, that failing horribly, to becoming a father, being, you know, excited and understanding, like being forced to be vulnerable, then that being leveraged against me, to now trying to deal with that legally, not being able to find an attorney, calling attorneys on top of attorneys on top of attorneys, not wanting to deal with that, being hopeless, to when I do finally find an attorney, that attorney pretty much doesn't really believe in my case, doesn't really care about my position. So losing hope again, to then ultimately find an attorney, which I'm excited about. I was able to afford the attorney, you know, based on, you know, the military money that I got over those several months, to now being put on child support to the tune of $880 when I only have $400 left a month after I paid all my bills. And I'm talking about no credit cards. I'm literally just living, like no credit cards, no debt whatsoever. So I'm like struck back down. The little hope that I had is now stripped away again. So you see this emotional roller coaster that I'm on. And so I remember sitting with Tom, actually. If you go back and listen to the episode, The Knowledge of Purpose, Tom is like that mentor. And whenever I mention like a mentor or somebody I look up to, like that's, it's usually him. And in this situation, I was talking to him, and I pretty much laid it out to him. I laid out my bills, what I had to do, and he was just like, I don't see how you're gonna make it. I don't see how you're gonna do it. I mean, he was like, I'll pull some strings. I'll talk to somebody to see if I can help you. But it got to the point where he just looked at me. He was like, Nick, you're a good man. And I just don't believe that, you know, God would just do you like this. Like, he would just leave you ass out like this. And that's kind of like that, again, like I mentioned before, like have faith. It's pretty much saying like, yo, you're screwed. And that's pretty much what he told me. It's like, you're in a nice way, telling somebody to have faith is a nice way to say, yo, you're screwed. I'm glad I'm not in your position. And so I'm sitting here telling him, all right, so my plan at that point was to be a bouncer. Because in my mind, it's just say if I go to the bank, I get off at 6 o'clock. I can go see my son from 6 to about 8:30 until he passes out. I could crash for maybe like an hour or so, get up and go to the club at like 10 o'clock. Bounce all night until about 2-3 o'clock in the morning, go home, try to get some sleep for at least, you know, 3 hours, and then get up and go to work tomorrow. But again, the problem with that is that's just more income. So she can now say, all right, well, he went from making $24 a month to now he's making, you know, $3,000 a month because he has a second job, so the child support needs to be this. So it's like this slippery slope, like it's like this mountain of debt that I owe that you can't get out of regardless of how hard you try to get out from it. So while I was gone, during military training, I realized that the promotion that Wells Fargo was going to give me wasn't going to happen. So I was kicking butt at my job. I was doing great at my job. I got promoted within the first 5 months, raised in the first 5 months, and they were already talking about me getting a license to be able to sell, not necessarily sell investments, but start becoming a financial advisor. And so I went away again. I had to go away from the military training. So when I came back, my regional manager pretty much said, I'm not going to promote you because I can't afford to, if you leave, I can't afford to have you gone for military duty again. I don't know if you had to leave again, which is completely illegal. But again, if the reputation that Wells Fargo had at that point, all they would have done was just made my life a living hell and hopefully made me quit on my own ability, on my own accord or whatever. And so there was a job that came up while I was gone, while I was, you know, doing like I guess training days on base. And so I applied for that. And I ultimately, now these full-time jobs in the Guard at that time were very hard to come by. I mean, people apply several times to multiple jobs before they get one of these, what they call active guard reserve positions, or AGR, because they give you a BAH allowance, basic housing allowance, which is a lot, because it's, remember, Colorado's expensive. They give you a food allowance and then your basic pay. So I applied for this job, interviewed for it, and I actually had a trip to Hawaii lined up, because in the Guard you have the 2-week service that you had to do, and for whatever reason they picked Hawaii. And so my mind, like, all right, I have this one good thing to look forward to. I can go to Hawaii for 2 weeks, you know, for the military or whatever. I've never been before. And so one day I'm at work and I get this notification saying, yo, like, your orders for Hawaii have been pulled, like, you're not going anymore. And I'm like, dang, like, what happened? So again, another negative on top of all these negatives that I have. And so then I get a call from the hiring manager from the interview that I had, saying, hey, you got the job. And so you have to understand, so I made, again, I was making about $40,000 a year. So my checks were like $1,200 a paycheck. But with this military job that I just got, it literally doubled my income. Like, literally doubled my income. So what I made in a month, I made in a paycheck. And also the structure of the job, it was like a 24 on schedule, 48 off. So I would work one day and I'd be off 2 days, work one day, off 2 days. And this all happened before my first child support payment was due. So you're talking about on time. I literally went from thinking about working 2, maybe 3 jobs to not needing, to doubling my income. And also not only doubling my income, but cutting the amount of time that I worked by like 2/3. So I went from working 5 to 6 days a week to 1 to 2 days a week, to 2 to 3 days a week. So now I'm working this job, affording child support in a way that I couldn't even fathom. Like, who could come up with the idea of a job paying you that much money to work that often? So I literally went from that. So that's the first glimpse of this is going to be okay. And so I was able to afford my child support payments comfortably. I ended up buying a condo because the rent was going up. So if I could at least own my own place, I don't have to worry about my mortgage, my payments, my cost of living going up. And even then, to find a condo in Fort Collins during that time was extremely hard. Like, you do your research. But I should not have been able to find a condo for the price that I got it for at the time that I found it. So you're talking about a blessing on top of a blessing. Again, these things I could not have written out. It was no idea, concept, or plan for me to come to these conclusions or these outcomes. So this is what I mean by, like, faith building. And so, but even then, at that point, I wasn't relying on it. It wasn't like, yo, like, this, I'm not worried about it. It's going to work out somehow. But things just were working out for me for whatever reason. Reasons that I was not actively participating in, because I had no means of coming to these solutions. So then what was happening was, so I would be at home again, you know, 4 to 5 days a week. So my son's mother would bring him to me during the day and then just pick him up when she got off work. So when we finally get to court, we were asking for two overnights a week, 1 weekend a month, because we just thought that, you know, we needed to come in and lowball. We didn't want to come in overly aggressive to make it seem like we were just trying to not co-parent at all, which wasn't the case at all, but it was just coming from the father's position. You had a position of weakness in these dynamics. We just felt like it was a better strategy to come in and lowball. So we come in and, I don't know, this case was wild. Her attorney was just very verbal. I mean, he went on these long soliloquies about, you know, how I was a danger, because her case was pretty much was saying I'm a danger to my son and that I don't know how to raise a young child. And so ultimately what happened was, and the judge responded, and this was interesting, this is kind of like another t- turning moment. She was like, well, if he's such a danger to the child, then why are you leaving him with whole days at a time? Now, remember, I just got this job. Because now, let's just say if I was at Wells Fargo, that case, that position probably would have held up because I wasn't with him at days at a time. But to say someone's a danger to your child, but then leave them with them, you know, 4 or 5 days out of the week, it's not a rational argument. But it became irrational because of the new position that I had, but the new schedule that I had. So it got to a point where I looked at my attorney a couple times, and this is, my attorney's great, like amazing. It was actually a couple times I looked at him and he was like knocked out sleep. And I'm like, bro, like, come on, you gotta wake up, man. And so they brought her on to make their argument, and she pretty much just demonized me. And I looked at my attorney. He was knocked out. So I like, yo, woke him up, and I was like, look, are you gonna refute any of this? Are you gonna call me back up on the stand so I can, like, you know, give my position? And he was like, no, don't worry about it. She's like, the judge has already made her decision. So I'm like, all right, man. And so at one point during the trial, the judge was like, you know, why are you only asking for two overnights a week? And my judge answered and gave the response that I gave you. Like, it was just our strategy. And I looked at him and I was like, is she thinking what I'm thinking she's thinking? And he was like, I don't know. And so we come back. So after my attorney was like, look, you know, we rest. We're not gonna make any more points. We're ready to go on to your decision. We step out for a bit, and I'm like, man, is she really considering doing what I think she's gonna do? And so he was like, I don't know. I mean, this is the thing about these cases, like, you never really know. It's so much psychological aspect of it, you know, when it comes to these cases. Like, they say it's not good to go to court on a Monday because a judge may have had a bad day, you know, a bad first day back, like all of us, you know, it's a Monday. So a judge is might likely to make a negative decision on a Monday as opposed to like a Wednesday. And so he read her, like, psychologically. And he was like, yo, she's already made her decision. So we come back in and she starts to read her position. And so she's like, all right, you know what, the first week, you know, that's, you know, 2 or 3 days is a lot, you know, to be away. But for the first couple of weeks, we're going to do one overnight a week. And then I'm like, all right. And then she said, for the second week, the second phase, a couple of weeks after that, we're going to go into 2 overnights a week. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty much what we asked for. And so my mind, I'm like, all right, we're good. Like, the stress at that point was gone. And so then she said, then the third phase, we're going to go into 3 overnights a week. And I'm like, what? So she pretty much gave us more than what we were asking for. And again, you got to take into consideration that overnights also depends on, also affects child support. Because although my son was with me like 3, 4, 5 days at a time, it didn't affect child support because he wasn't staying the night with me. So these overnights affects how much money I have to pay a month, which is, I feel like it's a lot, because it's like, if he's with me all day, I'm paying the cost of raising a child and I'm paying you. So it's like a double whammy. You know what I mean? Like the natural costs of raising a child on top of child support. And he's with me pretty much all the time. And so at this point, like, she pretty much threw a tantrum in court, like, kicked her shoes off, ran out the courtroom crying. Also, I ended up being able to claim him on taxes two out of every 3 years, which means more money in my pocket. And it was just the weirdest thing. And even then, so after she ran out, she literally ran out the courtroom. Her attorney walked up to me, shook my hand and said, I'm proud of you, because most men don't step up to the plate. And I tried to level with her, but she didn't want to listen. This is her attorney. So look at the full circle. I went from thinking I'm only going to see my son supervised, you know, one overnight a week, to her pretty much leveraging that against me. And also having an attorney that didn't believe my case, to now getting more time than we were asking for from the jump, to then her attorney coming up to me saying, I believed in your position the entire time. She wouldn't level. She wouldn't listen to me. I pretty much just took her money. So at that point, it was just like, okay, all right, God, I see what you're doing. You've pulled me out of these situations too many times for me to at any point be worried about certain outcomes. So at that point, like, my faith had been built up. So now when something goes wrong, I don't really freak out about it because, like, all right, you know, it's going to work out somehow. And for me at this point, it would be ungrateful for me to worry about certain situations not working out because God has saved my butt way too many times. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I'd be ungrateful. Like, it's like, what are you doing to be worried about the situation? You were in worse. Like, literally crying yourself to sleep at night to now... During COVID, a perfect example. So during COVID, because of my job, we had to work. We were considered essential workers because of the mission that we had. And so in order to keep us all separate, we had to work 72 hours on, 12 days off. So now I'm working two shifts a month with off 12 day stint. So pretty much I'm working once every 2 weeks. And so it was one point where my son's mom sent me an email saying, "You get so much time with him. I don't." And so think about the full circle, like the karma, if you will, of that. Someone that was trying to go, because if she got what she wanted, it still would have been, to this day, one overnight a week. And that whole case went down in 2016. And now, you know, talking about 2020, last year, I got the email saying, "Hey, you get so much time with him. I don't get as much time with you anywhere close. So I don't get any time with him at all." Like, think about that. Everything that she said, that she pretty much spoke on me, is now happening to her. So it's almost like poetic. Not to relish in it, but it's almost kind of like the story in the scriptures, the story of Pharaoh. When Pharaoh was like, every firstborn of you know, the Hebrews would be killed, and then God sent the angel of death and pretty much did that to the Egyptians. In my mind, like, that's the only thing that comes that I can relate that to. Everything that you cursed me with, everything that you wanted to happen to me, is now happening to you. Again, I have no control of these circumstances. So for me now, like, faith is just, it's an embedded thing in my psyche. Everything is going to work out just because everything up to this point, it works out. It's almost kind of like a spoiled child that's used to getting everything they want, even when they make a mistake. You know, mommy, daddy's gonna come and scoop you up and get you out of the situation. Like, that's how I feel with God and faith. It's like, regardless, now, if I'm out, you can screw it up. If I'm out here being reckless and being stupid, like, you know, I feel like God will let me get served, you know what I mean? But at the same time, if I'm doing what I'm supposed to do and I find myself in dire straits, I'm good. It's gonna work out somehow. Even if it's not how I envision it to work out, it'll ultimately work out better than what I pictured it to be. And so again, I'm not trying to get hyper-religious on you. I'm just giving you my understanding of what faith is. And my understanding of faith is just not some concept to give you a false sense of hope to get through whatever you're going through. My understanding of faith is, like, faith to me is my ability to trust God, to be honest, to be straight up with you. That regardless of what's going to happen, I'm going to be good. So that's a long story. But at the same time, like, it that winding road of me making a plan and it falling apart, me not having hope, and then it ultimately works out. And then, you know, me finding myself in a bad situation. I plan on it working out this way, and then somehow it doesn't. But then it works out better. Because now I'm in a situation where, you know, I'm in the military and I can retire, you know, in 10 years from now. So I'll be 45 when I retire, making way more money than what I'm probably qualified to make. And I'm happy. And also, like, this is another thing about this. So me working that one day on, 2 days off, I'm literally with my son every day. You don't understand how many times, like, somebody asked me, like, your son is always with you. Like, what's your custody situation? Because all my posts on Instagram and Facebook is just me and my son. So when I took my son to the park on the middle of the day on a Tuesday, I would only see, you know, stay-at-home moms, stay-at-home wives and grandma and grandpa with their kids. I was a full-blown father in his early 30s playing with his son at the park. Like, who does that? Like, who has that ability as a father to spend entire days with their child? I mean, a parent, period, because I mean, you got the typical work schedule is 4-10s, 5-8s, or if you're lucky, or if you own your own business, more than that. That's if you're working just a straight 40-hour work week. So if you're working more than that, you're not really getting time with your kids. You don't get up at, so you go to bed, let's just say at 10 o'clock, you wake up at 5, you get ready to go to work. You go to work, let's say at 8 or 9, you get off at like 5 or 6. So from 6 to, let's just say 6 to 10, what's that, 3-4 hours? You're only really conscious and interacting with your kids about 3-4 hours a day during the work week. And then you're tired on top of that. The kids are doing homework or whatever, so you're really not interacting with them that much, and then you've got the weekend. That's it. And I'm spending days with my son, like whole days. We'll go to theme parks in the middle on a Wednesday. We'll go to the water park on a Tuesday. We'll go to Nuggets games, Rockies games, in the middle of the day, in the middle of the week. And this is the kind of interaction that I had with my son. So it was kind of like the my biggest fear was not being a good father. And not only did that not come to fruition, I spent more time with my son than the average parent, the average good parent spends with their kid. So it's no reason for me to be scared. There's no reason to be worried. There's no reason to be anxious, although I do get anxious at times, because it's going to work out. And you can't convince me. And again, I'm not trying to get religious on you. This is just my faith. I believe in the Most High. And that's the thing that gives me peace, that gives me calm, because I just believe that it's going to work out. And you can't convince me otherwise. I would rather go down with the ship and like a complete idiot to say, yo, this is going to work out, and it not work out at all, because there's no reason for me to worry at this point. So I would love to hear your ideas and your concepts of faith. Reach out to me on my Instagram handle, Nikos_Ramon, NIKKOS_RAMONE. And I would love to hear your idea and your perspectives of faith and what that is and what that means to you and your experiences with it. So until then, be tempted. Hey, this is Nick Moore, your host. I understand that time is life, which is why I'm so grateful that you would take the time to listen to Forbidden Fruit Podcast. It's something that I do not take lightly. If you've enjoyed what you've heard so far, please share this with a friend. You can also show your support by downloading, following, or subscribing to the podcast, as well as leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to turn on your notifications so you don't miss an episode. Find me on Twitter at @podcast_fruit. I would love to hear from you. And like always, until then, be tempted.